You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, a credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already, wherever you're listening to podcasts to get the latest episodes. It's a special show today. A longtime fan favorite guest is back, and just a few weeks after his last appearance on the show, I'm looking forward to talking with features writer for Sports Illustrated and a friend of the program, Rohan Nadkarni. How are you doing, sir?
I'm great, David. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. Hanging in there as best we can. I hope you're safe and your family is doing well.
Yeah, man. Everything good on our end so far. You know, I'm just, it could be worse for me in sunny California. So I'm hanging in there.
Excellent. Well, perhaps not coincidentally, you're back to talk about the same subject as you did last time. That would be Jimmy Butler. Last time it was part of my exit interview series where you brought up some very interesting questions about what might happen with Jimmy this season and beyond. So to our listeners, please do go listen to that episode if you haven't already. But today, Jimmy was the focus of one of your recent deep dives for SI in a fantastic piece that really shows the complexity and multifaceted nature of Butler. At least that's my interpretation of it right off the bat. So I was curious because, you know, obviously you've had some deep connections with the Heat. You've covered the team, the league at large, of course, but, you know, your connection with the Heat goes back to your upbringing, your youth. What was the process, as much as you can get into it, about arranging for the story, how it all came together? Because you didn't mention this at all last time when we spoke, but I imagine you had this in the works for some time.
That's right. I don't remember when it was now, actually, when we spoke. It must have been in the works, but, you know, we'd heard from some people who we work with that represent Jimmy, at least in terms of his publicity, that he might be interested in doing something again. And, you know, I just kind of went hard after. I said, listen, I would love to do this. I'm obviously a big fan of the Heat, a big fan of Jimmy's. You know, what can we do to make this work? And I think to Jimmy's credit, he was interested. He's been really gracious over the years with his time with Sports Illustrated in particular. He's done stories with Andrew Sharp, Ben Golliver, Lee Jenkins. So there's just always something going on with Jimmy. He's always being very interesting. And, you know, I was just excited. We had an opportunity. We heard that he might be interested. And I kind of gave him the hard sell. I think that they recognized that, you know, I had done some Heat stories so that they knew that I would bring that passion to it. Yeah. And that's kind of how it happened.
What was his demeanor like via Zoom? Because I've been on like dozens of calls with him since the restart last July. But while he's never been curt or, you know, he can always be candid and funny. Those always are, you know, they're mandatory press relations here, aside from everybody, but not Kyrie Irving. Was he up for this or did he just see it as like another chore? Because it sounds like he was positive.
Oh, he was great. I mentioned this to you before we started. That's one of the easiest stories I've ever written in my life, just because Jimmy really did all the heavy lifting there. Really was just sharing a lot of great stories, and it was in a great mood. Probably the most time someone has used the MF word with me in an interview before, which I took as hopefully a sign that he was comfortable. We were having a good chat. You know, every time I'd ask him a question, he would just have this look on his face, like he knew what I was about to ask, or he knew the point I was trying to make, and he was getting excited to just blow it up. Like he knew that he was about to surprise me with his answer. So it was a lot of fun chatting with him. I was fortunate enough to do it over Zoom, and I think that really made it a much better interview.
Did it sting when he said he hadn't read a single thing you'd ever written?
I was not surprised. It wasn't even, again, the reaction I was going for when he said that. It was funny, but I was just trying to make a larger point about his redemption narrative. And then when he said that, I was like, this is a good tone setter for who Jimmy Butler is.
I mean, you can't imagine, at least I can't, is Jimmy sitting around going, oh, Ron, it said some really nice things about me in our recent interview.
I don't imagine anyone sitting down and reading Sports Illustrated, let alone noticing whose byline it was. So I certainly was not surprised.
You know, one of the things that came across, and this is something that I've thought about for some time now, I get the sense from Jimmy is that he's often, and he's never portrayed this way aside from your piece, but he kind of comes across to me as like the smartest Emmer ever in the room, that he just has like a very innate way of knowing what buttons need to be pushed. And like to your point before, he understood reading the interview, like what you were kind of gearing for, and kind of you knew how to be set up and to deliver the answers that you were looking for. Did you get that same sense from him as well?
It was interesting. I'm not sure how I would answer that question.
Frank Ron. No, I know you don't want to burn bridges, but at the same time.
No, no, no. I just think that he's, it's because it's not even like he's trying to push a narrative. I don't think he's trying to push a narrative. I just think that he's blunt to a fault is how I would describe him. Like he's just one of those guys that I just don't think he knows how to be any other way.
That's fair. I mean, you know, he comes across too as being much more positive than many people expect too. Was that an intention of yours? Did you want to just show, were you trying to show any kind of particular side of Jimmy or just kind of the full force of what he's like via interviews? And you know, you include a lot of anecdotes that kind of flesh out an interpretation of what he might be like. But did you have like a perspective that you wanted to highlight? Did you have any prior interactions with Jimmy before this piece that you could say, I know what he's like when I talk to him one-on-one?
I did not at all. And I'd certainly gone into the piece with kind of a frame of, I want to tell a story about how Jimmy Butler has gone from villain to hero. And that was kind of my original thought. And the piece turned into something else because really what I took away was, first of all, he doesn't care about that.
Right.
And I had some stuff from, you know, Goran and Duncan were both told me how happy they were that he's finally, you know, people are coming around to him. I think that as his friends, that's actually important for them that people are seeing this other side of Jimmy. I think what I took away was he's someone who's just so curious and it, you know, Eric Spoelstra, this is something that maybe didn't exactly make it into the story. I hinted at it, but Spo, I'll see if I can even find the exact quote for you. But Spo was like, you know, he's someone who would have thrived in the 90s era of basketball. I think he says, he would have maybe arguably thrived even more then. His level of competitiveness literally is top percentile. And then there's just this other side of him that, you know, if you saw him traveling in Europe, you never would imagine that he's this, you know, insane competitor. And that's really what I wanted to show is he's just someone who I think is like relentlessly curious and relentlessly interested. And, you know, somehow that also fuels him as a basketball player.
That seems about right. Like that basketball might be, well, here, that's a better question. Maybe. Do you get the sense that Jimmy loves basketball? Like, or is it just about proving to everybody that he's dominant or great in some way? Because I mean, there's certainly that competitive fire to him, but does he talk about basketball in a wistful sort of way where you could kind of sense whether or not he actually enjoys playing the sport, or is it just about beating other people and proving his dominance?
It's very interesting. I do think he loves basketball. I think what I would say is he's not one of those people because he is obsessive about it. I could hear in his voice.
Well, he's obsessive about everything. I mean, that comes across in your piece. Right. Like, I want to talk about that.
Right. I think that's almost more so is what I would say. It's not that he's one of those people that basketball is just a job for him or there's some kind of different motivation. He wants to be great. I mean, Dwayne Wade told me like we'd have conversations in Chicago. Like Jimmy wanted to be remembered as one of the greatest players who played this game. I think that kind of stuff is important to him. I think he just also realizes how much more there is to life. I think he has a real zest for life. Someone close to Jimmy told me like, I don't think you're going to see him become a commentator after he retires. He's not someone who is obsessively watching other playoff games. You know, you see LeBron tweet about I'm watching this playoff game or, you know, Jimmy's not watching League Pass in his downtime. It's not because he doesn't love basketball. He doesn't enjoy it. I think he just is one of those people that wants to reach out and touch everything around him at all times.
I mean, about the Big Face Coffee, it kind of became a joke and it was, yeah, sure. It's fun. One of those subplots to talk about in a very difficult time. Well, maybe not difficult for Jimmy, as you pointed out in your piece. Like the bubble was certainly a hardship for a lot of players, but he seemed to make the most of it, to your point also. And Big Face Coffee certainly became a very popular subplot there. And, you know, he also says in your piece, though, I wish I could take 5 years off and open a cafe. And he talks about coffee and having a particular bean of preference from Brazil, how he roasts and grinds everything, how he's perfecting his latte art. I mean, these kinds of things, you don't think of Jimmy as competitive and driven as he is, but maybe it's just this incredible obsessiveness with things that he does find interesting. Like we've heard him talk about wines before. Now it's with coffee. Obviously it's with basketball, this kind of obsession. You know, it's just so interesting to me to find somebody who loves things as much as he does.
Yeah, it's really incredible listening to him. I could have done probably 3,000 words just on coffee alone, but you know, that was something that he's really passionate about. I mean, he told me he's like asking people in cafes in Europe, like, how do you like to drink your coffee? Do you use almond milk? Do you use whole milk? Do you use soy milk? Like, he wants to know everything. I think once he sinks his teeth into something, he wants to know every single detail about it. He wants to know every variation about it. The coffee stuff was a lot of fun. You can tell it's something that's really meaningful for him. Obviously, it took on a life of its own in the bubble, but that was something he was passionate about before he got to the bubble. I think it was maybe going on while he was in Philadelphia, where he started to understand, like, okay, I can't keep putting eight sugars in my cup of coffee. Like, what's the right way to do this? And, you know, he's experimenting with ratios and temperatures. And, you know, I think he said shit's hard when he talked about latte art. Like, he's serious about it. And I think, you know, it really goes to show he's one of those people that I think once he kind of sinks his teeth into something or has an interest in something, you know, he can't do it without knowing everything about it.
Yeah, that does come across. And I love the idea and something you put in your piece about him coming up to people, random baristas throughout Europe, and asking these questions. And I can almost picture it being done completely without guile, because it's just so earnest in his interest about this, you know, this new topic that he wants to delve into as deeply as possible. And that's just a whole other layer to Jimmy than what we see so much of in the court. You know, like, he's so competitive, so driven, but the way he just goes about things off the court, it makes him, you know, one of the things that you talked about in your piece too, one of the most interesting people, if not the most interesting person in the NBA. We'll continue our conversation here. I'm with Rowan Nadkarni. We'll continue here on the number one Miami Heat podcast for the latest news, rumors, and analysis. On the NBA doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast, get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts. I'm here with Rowan Nadkarni, and we're talking about Jimmy Butler. You know, last time we kind of talked about Jimmy, it was through the exit interviews, and we were kind of, I don't know if we were dubious, but maybe we had legitimate concerns about the next step of his career. And you never really kind of, you never touched on that, because I think you were trying to show more about the multifaceted nature off the court than just his on-court play or what happens next as far as his career and things of that sort are concerned. Was that an active choice on your part, that you didn't want to delve too much about basketball and kind of show more of a bigger picture of what Jimmy's like?
Yeah, I think I let what people told me, I guess, dictate the direction of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
It really resonated with me the way, you know, Spo, the people around Jimmy, you know, even Duncan and Goran, I think all of them were just amazed by his, you know, curiosity. And I that's what I just wanted to ground the story in. And I think that's how it kind of ended up that way. I don't know that I necessarily... Sometimes I guess that decision was taken out of my hands, is what I would say.
Did anything wind up on the cutting room floor that you might want to share with my listeners?
I would. So this was a funny one. I thought, you know, I think I mentioned earlier, like, sometimes I'd start to ask a question to Jimmy and he had this look in his face, like, I know how I'm going to answer this. And I'd be so interested in this question, and he was ready to blow it up. I asked him, and I was asking him, you know, I was like, your finals performance was so inspiring, and, you know, people didn't think you had this in you earlier in your career, and you're going toe to toe with LeBron. And I was like, you know, did it mean something to you that you were able to prove something to everyone watching on that stage that you could go, you know, one-on-one with LeBron and really be that kind of player? And he just goes, honestly, no. He's like, I know what kind of player I am. I know what I can do. And all of that was for waste because we didn't win. And, you know, like I said, he's blunt to a fault. Like, I don't think that I think he recognizes, like, guys like LeBron, guys like Giannis, they're the competition. I have to go through them to win. Mm-hmm. but I don't think he holds himself in a regard of like, oh man, like if only I can scrap and claw in my way to beat LeBron. I think he genuinely expects to do it. I think he expected that finals performance from himself. And I think he's definitely satisfied that he acquitted himself well. I mean, there's no way deep down he's not proud of his effort, but I also believe him when he says it didn't mean anything special to me. I've always had this belief.
Well, I mean, you certainly mentioned that, like he's looking about this offseason and the lack of changes Miami made and how it compares to other would-be competitors and title chasers. And he seems like he's pretty adamant on Miami's chances. And he says in your piece, I feel the same way I always feel. I'm betting on the Heat. All the movement everybody's doing don't scare me none. We truly don't care. What makes me smile is every time we take the floor, the best players on the Miami Heat. And I found that last part a little curious because I imagine, or I'm reading into it, that he thinks he's the best player on the Miami Heat.
You know, I was wondering, I almost went to follow up. Were you talking about yourself or Bam? But
Because that goes against everything he said during the regular season.
You know, here's another thing that happened that I didn't fit into the story when he. So I had told Jimmy, I had told him, you know, during our Zoom interview, I was like, listen, I grew up a Heat fan. I follow this team closely. I love doing Heat stories. And we talked about that stuff for a little bit. And when he said it, don't scare me none. I told him, I was like, you know, it scares me a little bit. And he was like, it shouldn't. Okay, I'm sorry. So he really, like, at every turn, like, just refuses to give an inch about this team. And I think he's so happy to have the teammates that he has, and the guys are right there with him in terms of what they're willing to do on the floor. You know, one thing that didn't make it in the story that he mentioned about Spo was he really loves how militant Spo is about making sure people know their roles, and not in a way that's meant to denigrate someone like Duncan, but you know, that means Duncan's not held to necessarily, they're not asking him to do the same things that Jimmy does, but when he doesn't do what's being asked of him in his role, that's when people get upset, right? So I think that's another thing he really appreciates about Spo is he puts everyone in a position to succeed, and they know exactly what's being asked of them.
It's forced me to kind of rethink how I view leadership and things of that sort, because it's not so much about finding the right person, but what's made this season, or this past season rather, so successful for Miami is that I think that there's a clear hierarchy for the first time. It wasn't a knock on the Josh Richardson, James Johnson led teams or anything like that, or Dion Waiters. It was just that they were always so deep, and they had maybe no great talent on that team, but I don't think anybody really understood what they were supposed to be doing on the floor. And now with Jimmy's addition, clearly he's the best player on the team, or one of the best players. And everybody seems to kind of understand their role underneath him. And now that there's this hierarchy in place, it's so much easier. And I think that's what led to the kind of chemistry that we've seen so frequently over the course of the past season. And we'll probably see moving forward, although there are some things that might potentially disrupt that chemistry, which we'll talk about that in the next segment here on Locked On Heat. Reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Be sure to please subscribe to the show and, as always, leave a review. We're here with Rowan Nadkarni. We're talking about Jimmy Butler, the Miami Heat, and we'll be talking a little bit later about James Harden and his potential fit in Miami, where you stand on that. But one of the things that I didn't know about last season, I don't think it ever came up during any of the Zoom calls or interviews that I'd done, but I did not know that Butler had been ending every conversation with teammates with the phrase, and we're going to win a championship, repeating it over and over like a mantra, and one that worked. I mean, they didn't get the championship, but they got to the point of being there in contention. Who revealed that bit of information? Was it Duncan?
It was actually Goran Dragic who told me that. Yeah. Goran told me he just was, you know, Jimmy would start saying in team meetings or, you know, at the end of a film session or in the locker room after a loss, like, hey, if we do this, like we fix that, like, we're going to win a championship. I asked Duncan about it. Duncan was like, yeah, he would say it all the time. And then you just, eventually you start to believe it. I, You know, it's funny because when you'd watch Jimmy in the bubble, you know, during his TV interviews, or just, he just had that smirk on his face for so much of the season. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that he saw something in this team that made him think, hey, like, this team really has it. And I don't know if it was just false bravado and the bubble, maybe like it worked out perfectly for them, but you know, he really had everyone start believing it.
I don't think I ever saw your take on it via Twitter or anything. And I never asked you about it, but what was your feelings about the whole, a potential fluke comment or something along those lines? I think Zach Lowe was the one who first mentioned it in a piece about how GMs around the league are seeing Miami and their success in the bubble as somewhat of a fluke. I talked to Wes Goldberg, who you know well, very, very well, of course. I didn't get a bad feeling that about the fluke label. I think a lot of Heat Twitter took it very personally. I think they took advantage of a situation, which is what you kind of position yourself to do if you're the most well-prepared. And if you just beat up on everybody else because you're the biggest, strongest, and best prepared team, then what's the difference? Is it really all that insulting? But where do you feel about the whole fluke comment?
You know, I think we're on the same page in terms of, hey, the Heat, everyone was presented with the same situation and the Heat came in the most prepared. How can you fault them for that? Right.
Right.
You know, how can you fault the organization for making sure everyone was in shape, making sure the chemistry was good, you know, making sure that their, you know, culture, whatever you want to call it, like organizational ethos prepared everyone for the situation. How can you fault them for that? You know, no one's calling the Lakers run a fluke, certainly, right?
Right.
At the same time, when you look at the circumstances, okay, they went up 2-0 on Milwaukee. Do we think they could have gone up 2-0 against Milwaukee on the road?
Right.
If they're playing in front of the Bucks crowd, right. If they go up 1-0 and they come back, you know, Milwaukee's super amped up, the arena is crazy loud. You know, I'll never forget, I was at Philly's first home playoff game. You know, it was after Sam Hinkie got fired, but it was the first home playoff game kind of after the process, right? And that was when Dwayne Wade was still on the team. It was when he had just gotten traded back a couple months earlier, and I was at that game. And once I sat down in my seat that night and heard the crowd, I knew there was no way Miami was winning the game. It was louder than the AAA during game 7 of the finals. It was the most hostile environment I'd ever seen in my entire life. Not that people were, you know, saying things crazy. It just was, you could feel the energy. It was literally, it was tangible just how ready this crowd was to explode at any moment.
Yeah.
And that stuff makes a difference. So I don't think the Heat's run was a fluke. I just think that there are factors that it leveled the playing field and they were able to take advantage of it.
Which I love. I've talked about this on the show before.
Right. In a way, that's an argument for them being a better team, right?
Absolutely.
If you're removing all these variables,
right.
You know, no, that's my argument as well.
I love that because it's true, because like officiating could clearly be swayed by cheering and crowd noise and all these different factors. You see the referees get very demonstrative when they make a call because they're feeling the energy, because they're showmen in their own way. And it's pretty clear that it could, you know, skew the outcome of a game. So if you take all that away and just put this blank slate, which was basically what the Orlando bubble is, and you're somehow able to triumph through that, to your point, exactly, I think it shows that Miami was probably a much better team than a lot of people expected.
You can make an argument. Now, granted, this I think ignores the mental health effects of the bubble, which are very real, but you could make an argument that the Lakers title run was in some ways the truest championship ever won, right?
Yes.
Because we removed all the variables. There was no travel.
Right.
Everyone literally was living in the same place.
Right.
We removed all the intangible weird things that could happen during a postseason and, you know, said it's just basketball.
Right. Yeah, well said, man. I'm so glad to hear somebody else in media feel that way, because I really do think it's not something that's being talked about enough. I actually was hoping, as I'm watching the bubble and kind of and thinking about it afterwards, it hasn't been very long for me, but you know, I'm hoping that they'll have a bubble next season and moving forward. Like, I just think it's the purest form of basketball, and I know it takes away some of the emotion and everything else, but it doesn't come across that way when you're watching it on TV. You're still seeing players act demonstratively and emotionally and get caught up in the moment. And I think that kind of boils it down to its purest form. I mean, I know it's probably, well, I'm not saying it's improbable. It's impossible that the NBA will ever consider denying themselves that source of revenue, but it's something to consider. I'd love to see that in the future. I think
I tweeted that out. Like, I'd love to see some kind of bubble element, just because it really was an equalizer in a way that I thought was really interesting.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Back to Butler. I was kind of curious about Duncan's anecdote. It kind of shed some light on Jimmy and his well-reported abrasiveness, but at the same time, it kind of ties into what I was saying before about how he just seems to innately understand what buttons need to be pushed. And I wonder, Jimmy has already kind of understood that this is a team that has that backbone, that willingness to just continue to claw and fight your way through it. Did that come through in any of your interviews with Jimmy's teammates, how much they respect Jimmy's ability to press the right buttons, and that it comes through, as Duncan said, from a good place and not one of maliciousness?
For sure. You know, it's funny. I first of all, I do think Duncan is a sneaky trash talker. We saw reports. I think it was Windhorst who said, you know, he was trash talking with the Lakers and they kind of got tired of it. So I don't think Duncan is afraid. And I think he relished giving it to Jimmy at that first practice. He also made it clear to me, like, Jimmy got the better of me many more times throughout the rest of the season. And he let me hear it from his end too. Something that I mentioned in the piece a little bit, but Jimmy really talked about a lot, was how much the young guys on the team really fed off of his attitude. And I think he made it a point, like, you know, even if I'm having a bad day, I can't go to practice and not be saying what's up to people. I need to be giving everyone a high five. Like, if I come in and not do those things, like, you know, they might start to get worried. He even mentioned, like, maybe they think I'm going to snap because of what they've heard about me. So I do think Jimmy, more so than ever, was really cognizant. And he told me the bubble crystallized that for him, like how much the young guys on this team are really feeding off his energy. Something I didn't get to write about, but I asked him, I was like, I know you don't see this, but Eric Spoelstra is projecting like this insane amount of calm during his TV interviews, right? And it's like weird watching him do like the in-game interview during the finals where he's like, yeah, this is what competition's all about. Like, this is what we wanted. And I'm like, I'm freaking out. And Spo is, you know, giving this calm TV interview. And I asked Jimmy about that. And he's like, you know, think about Spo. He's got, you know, this, you know, Duncan is an undrafted shooter. He's got Tyler Hero. He's 20 years old. Like, Spo can't let the guys, you know, see him freak out. Like, he can't be sweating and nervous during a TV interview. And maybe the guys see that on ESPN the next day. So I think it was a combination of, you know, Jimmy realized he had the right pieces around him and also realized, you know, okay, I need to set the tone from a this is how we work perspective. These are our responsibilities perspective. It's, you know, a lot of the attitude of this team is going to come from how I project my confidence.
Is he endearing? Is he a villain? I mean, does it matter? Like, the idea of looking at players as heroes or people that we should identify with on the outside, it always has felt like fool's gold to me. And I just wonder, you know, in your conversation with him, I don't know if you were trying to paint any sort of picture. I know you kind of just let Jimmy do the heavy lifting, as you said, but should he fit into any one of those narratives, or is it maybe just time to kind of readdress how we look at players so simplistically, and that maybe it's possible that they're just much more diverse of personality than we ever care to expect?
I think it's really just that Jimmy Butler has not changed. It's only our perception of him has. And, you know, whether he's a hero or a villain depends on what the media is saying about him that season, right?
Yeah.
If you're asking me if he's endearing, he's one of the most, you know, engaged people I've ever spoken to in this business. It was a lot of fun talking to him. And I think that he's someone who has such a deep intellectual curiosity about the world that if you like talking about, you know, all these different things, like, he'll engage you on those conversations. You know, even the places he likes to travel to, like, yeah, sure, he'll spend time in France and Amsterdam, but he's made trips to Senegal, or he went to Anguilla, you know, this offseason. I think he likes to go off the beaten path, and he likes, you know, he'll meet an assistant coach who tells him about a certain place and he'll go there. He just is, you know, that is what I like about him, is that he has this curiosity and you know, loves.
Father Beaver, right? I mean, that's fascinating. Yeah.
And that is what I like about him more than anything.
Yeah, that's fair. And it just seems like it's such a contrast from the perception or the narrative that's been established over the course of his career. Like, you have to be Maybe he does. Maybe that's just the way he loves basketball. Even as we're talking about this, I'm thinking about it. Like he loves all these things. He's passionate. He goes into it. And maybe that's just how he applies himself to basketball. And for him, it's like, yes, I love this so much that I want to win at all costs, and I'm willing to sacrifice my life, my health, my sanity, just so I can pursue the ultimate goal of being the very best at this sport. It's a fascinating profile. And absolutely, if you have not read it, make sure you do. It's fantastic. I just wanted to talk about a couple other things before I let you go here. Obviously, the news around the Heat surrounding James Harden and the potential trade acquisition, I don't think it's likely to happen based on the price tag that Houston is reportedly seeking. I'm curious now, in context of what we're talking about, Jimmy and his friendship and relationship with Spo, the front office and everything else, whether or not you think they would be willing to acquire a player like Harden.
I think the Heat are obviously going to look into a Harden trade. I think that they are not – obviously, their offseason, it felt like they were saving space for 2021, but I don't think they want to make the same mistake they made with Dwayne Wade, for example, where they keep kicking the can down the road and hope to sign, you know, a big free agent and not take advantage of Jimmy Butler right now, especially because Jimmy's getting older, and I think that they must realize, like, this isn't going to last forever. We kind of need to capitalize on a talent like this while we have him here. I think that at the same time, as much as the Heat believe in their culture to kind of, you know, work with any star, anyone who comes in, I just don't know if Harden is that guy for them. And, you know, do you trade for 2 years of Harden and then let him go? Or do you trade for Harden and then sign him to a massive extension in 2 years, which is going to be, you know, in his mid-30s and command a lot of money? I don't know. I think it's complicated. You know, the Heat have some good young players. Certainly, I don't know that they have the assets to really give Houston what they want. I don't know if Tyler Hero is, as much as people really like him, I don't know that he's the best player Houston can get in a James Harden trade. So I don't necessarily see it happening for a lot of reasons. If anyone, I'd love to see the Heat try to go after PJ Tucker, because I think they still have a hole in power forward.
Yeah, no, that would be a great fit here. And I'm glad you brought that up. Something I've kind of ignored bringing up, because it never seems like he is being shopped around, although he seems pretty clearly disgruntled there. But it's going to be an interesting question. I don't think it's going to die down anytime soon. My feeling is that they'll just keep him and he'll stay there and he'll find a way to coexist as badly as possible with John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins. And we'll see the next time it'll come up is when things go very, very badly and he demands a trade or requests that somebody else on the roster has been traded. I don't know. I can't see them moving. We've seen so much player movement for these incredible packages and players and picks and combination of all these different aspects. It just seems unlikely that you can move a player like him, an MVP type player who is a top five player in the NBA for years, and expect to get anything commensurate in value. But that's a whole other conversation that we've been having way too often lately. This is the return of one of our favorite segments here. I don't think we talked about it during the exit interview recently, so I just kind of wanted to open the floor for Rowan's recipes. You're a well-known gastronomic, I'm not sure exactly what that term would be, but you love your food. You talk about it. It brings you an incredible amount of joy, just like coffee does to Jimmy Butler. Is there any hot food take that you want to share with my audience today?
You know, David, I have a vegan recipe for you today. Because nice. I always come on this podcast and I'm frequently talking about steaks or some kind of thing you can't eat. And I've been making an effort to eat some more plant-based meals at home. Something, if maybe you're listening to this and you want to warm up a little bit, something I would request to people. And this is a really easy meal to make, some pantry staples. Realistically, there's only maybe one ingredient you're really going to want to go out and buy. But I made a dish recently. It was kind of semi-based off mapo tofu, which is a dish of mine that a Sichuan dish that I really love. But this was mapo-style beans. This is a recipe that I very loosely adapted from Serious Eats. And you might be thinking, I don't have Sichuan peppercorns. I don't have fermented black bean paste. That's not the point. Here's what you want to do ultimately, okay? Just brown some mushrooms in a saucepan. I think I used roughly half a pound of mushrooms. Whatever you can find, I use shiitakes because that's what I had. Get them nice and brown. Make sure you cook all the water out. A lot of reason why people don't like mushrooms, they don't cook them long enough. It takes a good 8 to 10 minutes on medium high heat to cook all the water out of mushrooms. You want them to significantly reduce in size. You want them to be sizzling in the pan, not steaming. Once you've gotten to that stage is when you can have some fun. I did a can of, cannellini beans. You can add Great Northerns. You can add chickpeas. You could even add kidney beans if you wanted to. And then add flavors that you like. I added garlic, soy sauce, miso paste, some sambal. But maybe you want to go in an Italian direction. Add some parsley, some white wine, whatever you want. Have fun with it. But that's kind of the base, of well-browned mushrooms, some beans. And then take the flavors wherever you want to go. And you have a nice healthy meal full of fiber, full of protein. It's going to keep you full and warm in the winter.
That sounds delicious. Thank you so much for sharing that and for thinking of me and my vegetarian/vegan interests.
I also threw some canned artichokes in there, by the way, just for fun. Also a delicious, thing on top. So just keep that in your back pocket.
The artichokes, that doesn't give me the Asian flavored,
It doesn't, but that's the spirit of it, man. We're off the cuff here.
So where does the mapo come into it? Because it just seems like you start off with beans and mushrooms and then kind of work your way from there.
I loaded it with a ton of Sichuan peppercorns. Ton of Sichuan peppercorns. And, I didn't have some of the specialty ingredients, but I tried to get the funkiness in there, with some black barley miso, a really kind of well-fermented fancy soy sauce that I had, using a sambal chili paste. So, trying to, like I said, very loosely adapted, but just kind of using that as my guide for what I was going for here.
Yeah, we're big with kimchi paste around here.
We
put it on everything. If for my listeners, they haven't tried it, kimchi paste available, I think, on most Whole Foods and Asian markets, obviously, but you can put it on anything. I put it on eggs. You can put it on French fries. It's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, as always, so much. I'm so grateful for you coming on the show and taking the time. And you also had a fantastic piece on Anthony Davis. I'm sure my listeners probably don't want to hear anything about that, but you'll be doing a lot of work there. SI going through some major changes there and hiring some big names. And it's fantastic to still be able to read your incredible work as always. And again, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
My pleasure, man. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're days away from the start of the NBA regular season, and this week, the Locked On NBA podcast is previewing every team division by division. Get intel on each team, fantasy basketball, rookie projections, and predictions on each division. Subscribe to Locked On NBA wherever you get podcasts. Remember to get your team every day just by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat as soon as you get in your car. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support.